Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, March 28th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dickens.
Here.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Councilmember Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Item three is our flag salute, and it's a pleasure to have John Staube here from Knights of Columbus, who will lead us in the flag salute. And if you would remain standing for our invocation, please.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
O God, our Father, whose statutes are gracious and whose law is truth, bless the people of this city and those in authority that they may ordain only such things as are for the welfare and good of the people and the glory of thy holy name. Amen.
Amen.
Actually, that felt pretty good. I mean, I may get a part-time job. Get a collar. Might work. Okay, John. What's happening with Knights of Columbus?
Well, tomorrow...
Come on up to the mic and tell us about it.
Tomorrow we're having an initiation for two new members. In the month of April, we're going to have a membership drive after to all the masses at church. Last month, we presented a check for $2,100 to Special Olympics. In the next couple of months, we're going to present a $1,000 check to Alpha, the San Luis Obispo Alpha.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That's about it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being here and leading us in the flag salute, and appreciate all the work that you do.
Have a great evening.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That takes us to item five, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item six is agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item seven is our community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to come forward and comment or offer options and or separate action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any consent item. If you refer to your agenda, it is consent items 8A through 8G. If there is anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and comment on any of those items, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. No takers? Then we will close public comment on the consent agenda, bring this to the council. What is the will of the council? Any consent items?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to pull consent agenda item 8F just for a separate roll call, please.
Okay. Are there others? All right, if there are no others, then I will entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8G with the exception of 8F.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Anything in there to read this evening?
No, Mayor Ferrara, none.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Member Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. 8F, Councilmember Dickens?
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to have a separate roll call, so if someone would like to form a motion, we could go from there.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I propose that we approve item 8F.
I'll second that.
Okay. There is a motion and a second to approve 8F. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
No.
Councilmember Costello?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. That takes us to item nine, public hearings. We have none this evening. Item 10 is continued business. We have none. Item 11 is new business. 11A is consideration of the presentation on the Arroyo Grande Creek Habitat Conservation Plan. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. At the council request,
This evening, we'd like to present to you the Aurora Grande Creek Habitat Conservation Plan. This evening, I've asked Doug Bird. Doug is the Hydraulic Operations Administrator with the County Public Works Department. And to my left is Mark Hutchinson. Mark is the Environmental Programs Manager with the county. And they are going to be doing the presentation this evening, so I'll turn it over to Doug.
Thank you, Don, Mr. Mayor, Council members. As Don indicated, Doug Bird with County Public Works, and we're going to provide you with a brief presentation on the Lopez Habitat Conservation Plan. Our objectives are to review the chronology of the HCP, correspondence and discussions that we've had with the federal regulators, review of our district plan of action and strategies for proceeding, and a little bit of discussion on other habitat conservation plans in the state. This slide is just to give everybody a sense of the extent of what we're dealing with. The 13 miles of Arroyo Grande Creek from the ocean to Lopez Lake is, of course, the Arroyo Grande. The Habitat Conservation Plan itself covers the area from... So this is a picture of the steelhead trout, red-legged frog, tidewater gobies. There's two of them in there, actually. And tiger salamander, excuse me. Brief chronology, in 1990, the State Water Resources Control Board determined that the district's permit for operation of Lopez Reservoir did not reflect its historic releases. And essentially, the permit had covered a diversion to storage, but not what's called direct diversion, where you hold the water for less than 30 days and then use it either downstream or through the pipe to the five cities contractors. In 91, we submitted a permit amendment to the State Water Resources Control Board. And then in 1994, a complaint was filed against the district by the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance, and they indicated in their complaint that our historic releases had been detrimental not only to the steelhead, but also to the habitat for the steelhead in the Arroyo Grande Creek. Shortly after that, we met with a number of the resource agencies, and at that time they indicated that it would be best if the district was the lead agency for conducting the habitat conservation plan. So we were rolling along, and then in early 1998, a representative from Fish and Game found two dead steelhead trout in Arroyo Grande Creek just downstream of the property that the Penningtons used to own, which is a couple miles below the dam itself. And then in March of 1998, we met with resource agencies, and including their law enforcement officers, and at that time we agreed to conduct 5 million gallon day of releases into the creek until completion of the habitat conservation plan. Then in 1999, the Board of Supervisors, sitting as the board of the Flood Control District, executed a contract with Stetson Engineers to conduct the habitat conservation plan. And if you have the document before you, they are the firm that developed that document for us. In 1999, in November, our consultants were conducting in-stream flow studies of the creek and what would happen with the wetted surface of the creek if we reduced flows. It was determined shortly after that we could cut back from 5 million gallons a day to 4 million gallons a day. And so we notified Fish and Game and National Marine Fisheries of our plan to do that. And we have continued with that flow regime other than during the time that the Lopez Dam retrofit project was undergoing. And then there were requirements to dewater below the dam, and so the releases were higher than that. This slide is just a little bit of showing what efforts we've gone to work with your agency, the other Zone 3 agencies, the Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee, other organizations including Salmon Enhancement. And at the bottom, we have the website where the actual HCP can be found. And if you don't get it now, I can always provide that later. Environmental releases, downstream releases for the environment, are going to increase total releases from an annual average of 2,330 acre feet a year, or correction of certain in-stream passage improvements, such as the Arroyo Grande Gauge, establishment of mitigation accounts, in-stream mitigations and restorations, such as putting constructs into the stream for creating pools, and then also putting in specific gravels and that sort of thing for spawning areas, development and adoption of best management practices for stream maintenance and vegetation control, and then also a public education and awareness program. This is a list of the resource agencies that are involved now. National Marine Fisheries Service is a federal agency. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is federal, of course. California Department of Fish and Game and State Water Resources Control Board are both state agencies. The last two, the Army Corps of Engineers, which is a federal agency, and Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is a state agency, are not involved at this point in time, but they will be in the event that we actually go out and conduct in-stream mitigations. Once you start working into the creek, you have to get authorizations and permitting from those agencies also. We submitted a draft of this plan, the final draft that you have before you, or I believe some of you do, to the resource agencies, and their comments included they wanted an analysis alternative with higher minimum stream flows. It's an analysis model that was developed by a gentleman named Richter, so we've done that. They wanted us to consider additional species, which include speckled dace, tidewater goby, and southwestern pond turtle. Those are still under consideration by district staff. And in addition, they asked us to consider expansion of the boundaries of the habitat conservation plan to include the flood control channel in the lagoon. Additional comments from the agencies was obtain permits and easements to ensure implementation of non-flow actions. In other words, for anything where we're going to do in-stream work, they wanted us to ensure that we already have easements to get into the property, and they want us to have the necessary permits to go ahead and conduct those projects. They wanted us to revise the format of the document and split it into the three volumes. They have a specific template that they would like us to follow with. Unfortunately, we didn't have it available when we first put the document together, but we've done that. Assure baseline funding versus commitment to specific actions. In other words, provide agencies with assurances that funding is committed for proposed actions. And in order to do that, we will have to identify specific projects with specific cost estimates and identify where the funding will come from for those projects rather than the more broad brush approach that was taken in the document. So the approved action plan at this point is to proceed with the additional modeling requested by National Marine Fisheries, and that model has been submitted to them just in the last few weeks for their review. We have reviewed, commented, and responded to the resource agency comments regarding format, technical analysis, and other actions. One of the critical things that we asked the resource agencies, and this question came about from the Zone 3 Advisory Committee and the technical other steelhead HCPs. We've been doing this project. We hired the consulting firm back in 1999 to develop the habitat conservation plan, and we're still on the leading edge of the curve. Other HCPs are being prepared mostly in Northern California. There are no Section 10 habitat conservation plans in Santa Barbara. They have four coastal reservoirs, but they're working with Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act because the dams have a federal nexus, which we do not have with Lopez. There are no comparable Section 10 HCPs in Ventura County. They have three coastal reservoirs, and those also have federal nexus and are therefore Section 7. Continuing, Santa Clara Valley District is to develop an HCP for three creeks, and Santa Cruz is developing two. However, those haven't even been submitted for review by the agencies yet. There's one at Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District that's been approved in California, and I believe, and if we need further details, I believe Mark could provide it, but I believe it's a completely different situation than what we're dealing with here. So our current action plan is a Zone 3 review of the formal response, which was completed. continue our informal discussions with the resource agencies, and that is happening. Initiate a dialogue with legislative representatives. That's in progress, and there have been local team representatives selected to represent the district, including one staff member, Mr. Pava Ogren, to meet with our state and federal legislators to discuss where we are with this project, where this process is going, and to solicit their endorsement. Development of an interim downstream release plan, which is now in progress, and Mark and I plan to be providing a draft of that to the Technical Advisory Committee meeting at their meeting next Thursday. Development of the National Marine Fisheries Service flow model analysis. That was just, as I said before, that was just recently completed, and it's been submitted to National Marine Fisheries for their review. So that pretty much concludes the presentation, and Mark and I are both now available for any questions that you might have.
Okay. Who would like to start? Joe, you want to, any questions, since this is pretty much your area?
No, I have no questions. I'm very happy with what I've seen come forward.
Any questions?
I got a few. Okay. Thank you. This new higher flow model that they've asked for, what is the additional acre feet per year that would involve?
Mr. Arnold, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact number of acre feet it is, but I do know that when we run the model and graph it, they actually had three different levels. They had a high level, a medium, and a low. The high and the median levels are both higher than what's proposed in the preferred alternative, which, as we indicated earlier, is about 4,010 acre-feet a year. And, in fact, the high model drives the reservoir down so low that if we were to have another drought period like we had in the late 80s, we would have run out of water. The median, initially we indicated to them that we felt that it would break the bank, so to speak, and they insisted that until we actually did the analysis and provided them with the results of that, they would not review anything else in the document. So we are proceeding, and as I said, we just recently submitted that to them, and I think within another month or so we'll be calling them if we haven't heard anything and asking if they can take a look at it. The last time we submitted to them, we went 3 months, and then we called them, and they hadn't even looked at it. So, but again, to answer your question, we're hoping that this will, you know, what we've provided them, the information we've provided them will indicate that the Richter model does not allow us to continue providing water to your agency and the other Zone 3 agencies and to meet our obligations under our contracts, and also to continue providing downstream releases for agriculture, that it will put us in a position of, breaking the bank as far as the reservoir supply is concerned.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. I think I understand this, but I want to verify. The HEP cannot be approved without the incidental take permit being approved also. So they couldn't, like, separate out and say, okay, you get to do the habitat protection, but we're still not going to give you the incidental take permit.
The whole purpose of the incidental, or the HCP, is to, well, as far as this particular portion of what we're doing is to have that document brought to a point where we're all in agreement, the federal agencies, the state agencies, and the district are all in agreement on the provisions and the terms and the operational conditions that are in it. And then we final the document, and then we get two things. We get an incidental take permit issued by National Marine Fisheries, and we also sign an implementing agreement, which is essentially a contract, and we're trying to get a 20-year contract. It's a contract between the district and the resource agencies, and it sets up how we're going to operate the project in the future and what things we can do and what things we can't do. It'll set all the limits on what we can actually do with it. So, yes, they're all tied together, and that's part of what we're trying to do is get the document finaled and then get the incidental take permit.
You mentioned that 20-year time frame. Is that pretty much pushing the limit as far as they'll accept?
I don't know. You know, as we showed you previously, there aren't very many steelhead HCPs out there, and there's only been one that we're aware of on a Section 10 side, which is what we're doing, that has been approved at this point. I think I've seen larger, broader brush type HCPs, and Mark could probably address this better than I can, but I believe there was one that was a 30-year habitat conservation plan, but I'm not sure it was so specific for individual species. So.
Excuse me, Mark Hutchinson, Public Works Department. I'm not aware of the terms of the other HCPs that have been approved, although I believe the Humboldt Bay plan is at least 15 years and possibly 20. Although that's somewhat of a different situation there, it turns out that the actions that one would take to protect steelhead on the Mad River almost exactly matched the district's or that district's operating protocol for the last 15 or 20.
Creek is basically under the jurisdiction of the DWR, and if I'm correct, that has not occurred.
No, and that, I believe that's a reference to zones 1 and 1A, is it not?
Okay, I got you. All right, thank you. So that would clarify that. That's all, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Doug, I had a couple questions. Right now, if I hear you correctly, when we first started the process to get us back into compliance, we were releasing up to approximately 5 million gallons per day, and now we've dropped that back to about 4 million gallons per day.
The 5 million gallons a day was initiated after the two dead steelhead were found in the creek, and historically the practice was only to release during the summer months for groundwater recharge and for the agricultural users along the Rio Grande Valley. And then we would terminate the releases from the fall and the winter, mm-hmm. early winter. And that's what we did that year. And then a couple months later in January, two dead steelhead were found. We got a call from Fish and Game. We turned around immediately and started up the releases, and then a couple months later we met with the resource agencies. And their enforcement officers indicated to us that at that time they were prepared to take enforcement action against the district. And we indicated that we would prefer that they did not, and we came to an agreement that we would initiate, or we would keep conducting 5 million gallon a day releases until the habitat conservation plan was finalized and that we had our incidental take permit, and then we would go into our preferred alternative for downstream releases. The reduction to 4 million gallons a day was done after our consultants did field studies, and they found that, we ramped down from 5 million gallons a day one day down to 4.5, and then we went down to 4. Then we tried 3.5, and that didn't work, because when the farmer up at the head of the river below the dam started pumping, we started losing surface flow, so we cranked it back up, and since then we've been keeping a close eye on it, and the 4 million gallons a day appears to work fairly well. We're not losing surface flow, so we're not endangering any of the species out there, and we're able to save that amount of water, that 1 million gallons a day, which is probably on the order of somewhere around 1,000 acre feet a year, in the reservoir for other uses such as deliveries to your agencies.
So when you talk about the 4,010 acre feet per year, how does that equate then on the average to gallons, how many million gallons per day? Is it?
I'm not sure. I brought my calculator with me on that one.
I'm trying to put apples to apples. Is that an increase
an acre
or a decrease?
Foot, an acre foot is 385,000 gallons approximately. So you take the 385,000 times, and I don't know if one of our engineers
can I take
has
a shot
calculator.
At that, Doug? Some numbers off the top of my head. Actually, I was working on this today. The 4 million gallons a day we're currently releasing is approximately 6 cubic feet per second, and that equates to about 4,344 acre feet.
1-5, we have three different strategies, and these are kind of broad brush, but one is very specific. The second one is the removal of the Arroyo Grande stream flow gauge that has been identified as a significant passage impediment to steelhead migration. That that in and of itself, I want you to kind of let me know, then if we're going to remove that, then how do we then maintain the level of documentation throughout the years? Because further in, I think in 3-7, we make the statement that says the Rio Grande gauge has the longest period of record and is particularly important because it covers the periods before and after completion of the Lopez Dam. So we have a structure that's identified as something that's extremely important, and yet part of our conservation plan is to remove it. So if we do the removal, what then takes the place of that important structure?
If it says removal, I have to apologize for that, because that would be a typographical error. The plan and the thought is today is to either modify the structure in place or to relocate it to some other place where it will not be a passage barrier for the steelhead trout. But we do not want to lose that recording device. We don't want to lose that historical record. And in fact, part of what we're looking at over the next year is installation of a couple more stream gauges and automation of a complete automation of the one at Rio Grande and also the one at Chiquetti Road, so that we can get real-time data from those, at least on a 1-hour minimum basis. So again, I apologize if that's what it says, but the plan is not to just take it out and get rid of it. We want to still be able to use that area. It's critical not only from the historical standpoint, but also for our overall creek monitoring program for when we implement the habitat conservation.
I thought that was pretty significant. It does say removal, so that may need to be looked at. Okay. And that brings me to another question. There are other gauges that have been discontinued. Are those gauges, let's say, for instance, the one on Tar Springs, is that still in place, or has that been removed? And would that not also be a significant thing to bring back online? It seems like to me we'd want to – that's a whole different watershed that has nothing to do with Lopez Dam. Mm-hmm. And yet it'd be nice to know what the historic flows are from that area. And there may be some others too.
I personally don't know about Tar Springs. Mark, do you?
The gauge at Tar Springs, I believe, was a USGS gauge. And probably a float type gauge through a weir, some of which is still remaining. As it currently stands, we have the Rio Grande gauge, which is below the confluence, mm-hmm. and we have a gauge at Cachetti, which is above. I believe, I don't know for a fact, that USGS felt that the gauge was redundant based on the fact that we have volumes measured at the dam and also below the confluence. That kind of information together with the historic, I think, allowed them to essentially have the same level of knowledge without actually having a gauge in place.
Thank you. Just a couple of other comments. Page 3-31.
This has been in the range of 2,330 acre feet, and the preferred alternative is more than that. One of the things that the model predicted is that if you do lower the level of the reservoir, you actually, particularly during a rainy season, you increase its capacity to hold the rain that's coming in. So
I think if we go, you know, directly to the question about being able to meet the contracted amounts, the way the HCP is proposed in the preferred alternative, the dam would continue to meet all of the current contracts. There's the question of surplus water that's been delivered in the past, and it's not clear at this point whether that would still be available. And there is that odd situation. It seems wrong that we could release more water but then at the same time increase the safe yield analysis or the safe yield amounts for the dam. It takes a while to get your eye around that, but essentially, by creating storage volume, we would one of the results of the HCP would be to reduce the amount of water that goes over the spillway, which in water planning is considered to be lost water. But at this point, the district is holding fast to meeting those contracted amounts, and we have not put anything in the HCP that would, based on the historic record and the analysis, would endanger that.
So at this point, there's no concern about a decrease of water supplies through the habitat conservation plan?
No, not based on the proposal or on the modeling that's been done.
Okay. On the same page, there's a paragraph that I just put a big question mark on because I don't really understand it, and I think there may be a problem with it. But the middle of the paragraph, we're talking about the groundwater supplies, and it says, with regard to groundwater, recent investigations conducted by the Department of Water Resources indicate that the sustained yield of the San Luis Obispo Valley groundwater basin, that's my first question, we're not in the San Luis Obispo groundwater basin unless we're using a different terminology. We're in the Santa Maria groundwater basin here. So I don't know if that's a typo or what we're looking at. And then basically it's talking about the fact that indicate that the sustained yield of that basin is estimated at 5,900 acre feet per year. Note that agricultural water demand is expected to range from 12,400 to 16,500 acre feet per year. It is conceivable that the agricultural water needs could fully utilize available groundwater yield. Thus, it can be concluded that this overview of water needs in the Five Cities area and Lopez Reservoir may play a major role in meeting the predicted 4,950 acre feet increase in urban water needs, which is based on the build-out conditions. So my first question is that correct when we're talking about the yield of the San Luis Obispo Valley groundwater basin? Is that a different basin, or should we be identifying a different basin there?
I believe that should state Rio Grande Valley Basin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think it's actually commonly referred to as the maybe you can't answer that tonight, but if I'm having confusion with it, either.
I believe what that is, and what you've pointed out is one of several sections in the HCP that you have to read three or four times, and I even showed it to my staff and said, you know, this is from the water modeling engineers, which sometimes goes over my head. The intent of that whole section is they're trying to establish a case with scientific certainty that there's not a lot of water available for messing around with, to put it bluntly. They're trying to make the case to the resource agencies that, you know, we are in Southern California from a water perspective, and the numbers are close. There's not a lot of water, so things like the National Marine Fisheries high flow model, they were trying to head off with that kind of discussion. And as it turned out, we had to go use the agency's method to make the exact same point.
And just to add on to that a little bit, you know, the whole emphasis that the district staff have been placing and asked the consultants to place into the document, and based on input from Zone 3 Advisory Committee and the Technical Advisory Committee, is to maximize in-stream mitigations and try to minimize the additional amount of flows that are going to have to be released into the creek system. We don't want to do anything that's going to endanger the species there, but we're trying to come up with a solution that will work for meeting the additional environmental needs that we need to now, and not run all the water out.
One last question, then I'll just make a quick comment. Doug, you talked about in your PowerPoint implementation strategy of creating a mitigation accounts. Can you explain what that would be? Is that an actual physical funding that would come out of maybe the water bills that would be set aside for mitigation measures? So you're talking about creating a mitigation account.
Exactly. That would be money that would be specifically set aside in a designated reserve to use for various in-stream mitigations.
Yes. And that would typically come out of?
That would be through the district's revenues as for Zone 3, Flood Control Zone 3, yes.
And the last is just more of a comment, and I know, Doug, when you were here last time, I understand why we're doing the habitat conservation plan and mm-hmm. why the district's need is. My biggest trouble with this, and it's just more of my own personal pet peeve with this, is that the system is flawed in the sense that at what level are we trying to bring back the habitat? I understand we have to mitigate certain issues, but there's nothing in here that says we have to mitigate it back to something. And reality is that if we look at the historic data, with the flows from the creek, we're doing better today than we were previous Lopez. So, you know, that's just more of my general comment. You don't need to respond to that. But
thank you. Understood.
All right.
Doug, I had this is a question for you. Would it be helpful at all, since we're in the process, if I understand this item, we're in the process of providing input. So I would imagine that our commentary is going to go in the hopper along with everyone else's, and
yes, sir.
And then this will ultimately be finalized. So I guess I would ask the council that to. And it talks about the district request authorization for incidental take of steelhead, red-legged frog, so on and so forth, associated with the following covered activities. And it refers to the channel, the last bullet there in that list is channel facility maintenance by the district in Arroyo Grande Creek. And I guess my question is the degree to which there is an interface or some form of correlation between what the district intends to do as far as a maintenance and operations of the creek and how that's going to integrate, hopefully, with our creek maintenance program or plan or whatever. Have we talked about that interface at all, or how that's going to come together? Are the two going to talk to each other? What's the situation with that?
Well, I think that, you know, this plan was prepared prior to all the discussions we've had recently for Zone 11A. And I think once those things get resolved, I think we can include them in the final draft of this, or the final presentation to the resource agencies. I think we can combine some of those maintenance aspects that you just mentioned.
Okay. All right. This is not a public hearing. But we do typically allow the public to comment on business items. Anyone in the audience that would like to come forward on this item, feel free. No one? Okay. We'll close public comment. Any other questions for? Yes.
Mr. Mayor. Doug, I had just one more question. I'm sorry. And it was brought up in your PowerPoint presentation, and I guess I just wanted you to elaborate on it a little bit more. We talked, there was a suggestion of actually allowing this habitat conservation plan to actually cover the flood control reaches that we currently call Zone 11A, or at least probably in this case it'd probably just be Zone 1, because 1A I think is Los Barros. But what would be the advantages of doing that at this point?
If I could start at the beginning, you know, when the studies were conducted by the consultant, the studies included the entire 13-mile stretch of the creek, including the flood control channel, zones 1 and 1A. When there was discussion and thought that operation and maintenance of the zones 1 and 1A was going to be turned over to the Department of Water Resources, and when that action was actually taken by the Board of Supervisors, the direction was to remove that section from the Habitat Conservation Plan. The reason being, in part, is that the district can only ask to have covered in the incidental take permit the actions that the district takes, its day-to-day operations and maintenance. So if another agency is conducting work in the flood control channel, the district has no control over that. And, of course, Zones 1 and 1A are separate from Zone 3, so you've got that. The other thing that and I talked to the mayor a little bit about it earlier, is that we're conducting what's called a Section 10 Habitat Conservation Plan under the Endangered Species Act, and you can see just time, and Mr. Hutchinson can get into more detail if you like on that, but it's less time and less money for going through that. So You could be brought back in, but we're looking at it is a separate zone from Zone 3. But again, to bring it into this habitat conservation plan, you're looking at extending out the amount of time that it would actually take to resolve the environmental issues. And Mark, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, I don't know that I could add a whole lot without making it a lot more complicated, but Section 7 versus Section 10 and all of that. I do everyday environmental permits, everything from CEQA and NEPA and Endangered Species Act. And depending on your perspective on life, Section 10 of the Endangered Species Act is either as good as it gets or as bad as it gets, depending on how much work you want to do. I don't know that there would be an advantage to either zone by combining or expanding the HCP over the top. Certainly it's important that both coordinate their efforts, understand what the other one's doing, and the size of our community lends itself to that. There is a perspective that says when we're involved in these consultations, whether Section 7 or Section 10, we are handing a lot of the reins and control and to a federal agency. They are good at a lot of things in my experience, but putting projects on the ground and making it work for the community is not necessarily one of the things they're good at. So from the perspective of best meeting the needs of the communities, the idea that we coordinate all of the efforts in the watershed and have a vision of a coordinated effort, whether it's Section 10 or 7 or a watershed plan or ordinances for drainage or whatever, is something we need to do. But putting a federal agency that's their closest offices in Ventura essentially in the driver's seat of all of that is probably something we don't want to do.
I guess my comment was when I saw that on the PowerPoint, I was kind of curious as to, you know, what the advantages would be, and I don't really see that. So it doesn't in your opinion, is it something that you're probably not too anxious to move forward with, although it was a suggestion of looking into it, I'm assuming.
Yes, it was, but again, you're correct. It's we don't think it would be beneficial, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a closing comment then on the issue of Zone 1-1A. If the action that resulted in taking that portion of the study and setting it aside was based on the assumption that Zone 1-1A, the flood control channel, was going to be relinquished to DWR. If that stopped the study or that portion of the study, I think we all agree at this point that it's probably remote that's going to happen now. Given that, back up a little ways and go back to the original planning assumptions that did include it. How was this study originally intending to treat Zone 1-1A before the Board of Supervisors took their action a couple of years ago? In other words,
there's separate environmental permitting because we didn't have a document. We don't have a complete document. We don't have an approved document at this point. So,
well, does the whole concept of incidental taking, if a study is built around that and justification rationale is put in place, in other words, you've studied the impact of what you're going to do, does that in and of itself facilitate the permitting process?
I think I can take that one on. It is an interesting situation, and not to totally foreclose the idea of extending the HCP all the way to the ocean, we may end up having to do that. What's interesting about the situation is that the impacts that Zone 3 is proposing that we need a permit for is essentially the act of slowing the water down during drought years, and by doing that, killing fish and frogs. And so our proposal is to enhance the habitat by releasing more water in wet years and doing conservation actions. As opposed to Zone 1, the action that would result in impacts would be to physically go in and modify the stream. So there's incidental take in both situations, but the source of that take is quite a bit different. I'm probably going to give my counsel some headaches because we will be looking at the pros and cons of if we have to extend the HCP to the ocean in order to address flow-related impacts to tidewater goby, for instance, and that's the one that would be driving it. And then our impact there, we're controlling from Zone 3 nothing more than the amount of water down the stream. If we had that kind of an impact and included it in the HCP so that we had incidental take coverage for Zone 3 for activities related to controlling the water. We'll be looking for a Section 7 incidental take permit at the same time that would cover the flood control district, part of the same area, but the list of activities that would be included in that permit would be radically different. Because for Zone 1, we would be going in and either through vegetation management or direct sediment removal having an immediate and obvious impact on the stream. And that kind of thing may be the most efficient way to do both of these. Now, that being said, Zone 1 has already benefited from a lot of the habitat information that this document generated. The studies that were done have taken advantage of that. It's been shared not only with Zone 1, but with the Watershed Forum and the Rio Grande Creek Watershed Plan. So I think we're doing a pretty good job of making sure that everybody has all the information that has been generated. And that be, again, as I stated earlier, that's one of the most important things, is that we all continue to talk to each other.
What was the timing of this draft being available and the publication of the alternative study that was done by Swanson Hydrology? I believe there was an environmental segment, if you will, in that document. Did they access this plan at all?
I think order-wise, this document was produced first.
The concern that I have about not extending it to Zone 11A is that when you look at the relationship between the activities that you intend to fund, the projects that you intend to fund out of the conservation account, it was like I was mentioning to you earlier this evening, when you talk about the Rio Grande Creek, improving channel bank stability, reducing erosion, riparian vegetation planning. Farther down, you talk about best practices for stream maintenance, vegetation control, so on and so forth. With the exception of, I don't see anything here that deals with the removal of built-up siltation, which would be an additional activity that obviously has to happen in certain areas in Zone 11A. But largely, the nature of activity is the same. So I guess cutting to the chase here, the extent to which including Zone 11A in whether it's your Section 10 or Section 7 in some configuration could show continuity, consistency, some sort of comprehensive planning that would assist in the acquisition of permits. In other words, that whole issue of permitting, as you well know, has been a sore issue when we talk about what has and has not been done in Zone 11A. And I guess I'm just looking for a workaround here. Can this document, can the inclusion of it help that process at all? So, consider it a rhetorical question at this point. But that would be something, Don, that I would want to add to the list as coming from the city, would be that notation. Because that's clearly going to be some of the challenges ahead right now if we're going to be successful down there. Any other comments on this? Okay. I believe that's quite enough for tonight. Thanks very much for being here, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for the time. All right, that takes us to item 12, City Council Reports. I'll go first. Last LOCOG meeting was canceled. However, we did have an executive board meeting and set the agenda. Some interesting items coming up that I'm sure you'll read about in the newsletter that LOCOG puts out, some of the projects that are, again, underfunded and now have the potential for sort of wiping out some of our operational activity that we had planned. And so it's going to be an interesting meeting discussing some of the things up in North County when it comes up. South San Obispo County Sanitation District, we have met. And I meant to bring a brochure. We did dedicate the chlorinator, and I think you were all invited to the dedication ceremony. There was a picture in the Times Press Recorder. And again, that was those are the major ones. And with that, we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem.
On EVC, we did have a nice presentation from the California Space Authority. One of the things that's kind of interesting there that they're developing is a visitor center down at Vandenberg, just outside of the base, which looks like it could actually be a very large and actually has some potential to be a really significant tourist attraction, where you actually be able to, they'll have an amphitheater where you can actually watch the launches from this facility instead of everybody just parking on the side of the road. A lot of other things there as well. So that's an interesting development, as well as the fact that they continue to bring other launch vehicles to that facility, which, of course, is helping the entire Central Coast. We also had a presentation on the latest Delidio project. Nice quiet one this time. I guess last time we got pretty excited, but this time it was pretty quiet. And we've started to have quite a few sponsorships come through. So I think the financial situation of that organization is on much solider ground than it was 6 months ago and is looking up for the future. So that's that report, and that's the only one that I have.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, I did attend the South County Area Transit meeting last week. We did approve the budget. Some of the things that we're looking into are purchasing a bus, I believe, that runs on, was it electricity, I believe? A fairly hybrid type of bus, which would be the first one in the county. Yes. Steve, do you remember, was it electricity?
It was hybrid, yeah.
And there was a quick note on the extended route of 24 that goes out here to Strother Park. There doesn't seem to be any more complaints. I know we had a gentleman come to us, but I think they've resolved those issues in regards to the buses turning around in the parking lot. They did suggest or state that there hasn't been the ridership that they thought coming out of the senior mobile home park out there, but they have picked up a lot of incidentals from both the residents and the school out of Paulding. So it has been a positive. That pretty much covers South County Area Transit. South County Youth Coalition, again, I wasn't able to make that meeting. I believe that was last week as well. So I have no report there.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did attend the Zone 3 Water Advisory Board meeting a couple of weeks ago. We had the standard reports on the activities coming out of Lopez. Recreational use did seem to be down a little bit this year over last year. Did have the opportunity to talk with staff about any changes or any significant changes, such as we had with the increase in price on the bid for the upgrade of the plant. We'd like to have full reports to the council. I don't think there was anything else significant at that meeting. Unfortunately, last week we had the APCD meeting, Air Pollution Control District meeting. I was out of town and could not make that. Last week we also had the first meeting of the Fire Oversight Committee here in this very room. The changes that we had advocated and asked for were accepted. I believe Councilman Lieberman was elected the chairman of the committee.
Who?
Steve Lieberman out of Grover Beach.
Oh, okay.
That was pretty much what we accomplished. The regular meeting of the Grover Beach Royal Grandy Fire Committee will be coming up in a couple of weeks also. And that's my report.
Okay. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did attend the Integrated Waste Management Board meeting, and the primary discussion there was the addition of batteries. Household batteries is now classified as a hazardous waste. And so they are looking at creating a model ordinance for the cities to adopt. Right now, they do not have the capacity that if everyone were to bring the batteries out to the landfill, that they would be overwhelmed. Unfortunately, one of the proposals was discussed to put
the batteries in Ziploc bags and put them in the recycling, but while before you could throw them away and it was okay, now you can't even transport them in a truck that way. So there's a lot of discussion as to whether or not all stores would be required to accept them or whether larger stores. So they're going to work on an ordinance, and I'll be bringing that to the council once they have something. The RAC, I was unable to attend, but I did get a copy of the minutes. And the primary discussion there was in regards to the rural plan development ordinance in the county, and there was a recommendation to ask the supervisors to stop that process right now due to the limited water resources throughout the county and the risk with all the underlying lots, the potential of excessive development in the rural areas. So that was forwarded as a recommendation to the supervisors. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Thank you. That takes us to item 13. I don't see any city council member items. Item 14, city manager items. Steve, none this evening? Council communication, any correspondence, comments, activities? I did have a couple of activities that I neglected to mention on Friday. I'll be traveling down to L.A. one day down and back, which is about all I can endure, to attend a League of Cities Public Safety Policy Committee meeting. And then also tomorrow morning, the Mayor Pro Tem and I will be meeting with Public Works. It's appropriate for our discussion item tonight. And also Salmon Enhancement and Resource Conservation District, and also a representative from Congressman Thomas's office to look at a number of different aspects of our creek maintenance program here in Arroyo Grande to include some potential funding. So that should be an interesting discussion. I think we'll bring this along. Okay. Any other council communication, staff communication, anything tonight, Steve?
None this evening.
Okay. Item 17 is our last community comments and suggestions, an opportunity for anyone to come forward and comment on any item, whether it's on the agenda or
site. Everybody that was involved in the discussion regarding the age of the trees, the viability of those trees, seemed to indicate that they felt those trees were 65 to 80 years old, specifically the eucalyptus trees, and everybody seemed to come to the conclusion that lifespan on those particular trees would be somewhere in the vicinity of 75 to 100 years. What that indicates to me is that they have probably already lived or existed there for somewhere between around 80% of their usable lifespan. So I think what we're doing by trying to save them, those trees, is a disservice to the city landscape and to the city tree habitat. And deferring taking action on those trees to the next generation, which I don't think we should do. What we should be doing in a project like this, where the properties are going to be redeveloped, and they probably will not be redeveloped again for 50 years or longer, is look at that 50 to 100-year future of the city's treescape. These trees in 15 years are going to have used up 90 to 100% of their lifespan. If they're not falling down now or presenting a damage or to property or life, hazard to life, then they will be probably by then. So what we could do now, if we were truly wanted to be a tree city, is we could take out some old trees that do not have much of a usable lifespan, that everybody admits are non-native trees. In most cases, they're considered to be trash trees, eucalyptus specifically, even though they are not the worst of the eucalyptus. And what could be done with this project is we could take those trees out, replant new trees that would be specific species that would be from the Central Coast, or at least California-specific trees that would have a lifespan of 50 to 100 years, and in that case, put forward a treescape or streetscape that would live on into the future, significant future, of the city, instead of taking and putting off the inevitable for another 10 or 15 years. I think the city needs to look at a longer picture and not try to save trees that have used most of their lifespan, that are not native trees, that should be removed for safety's sake, if not today, in the very near future, and take that opportunity to re-landscape the city with trees that are appropriate to the city and could be appropriately planted. And I think we need to get away from trying to save every half-dead tree just for the sake of it being there and look to the future of the city's treescape. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Body contact to where we can swim and any other sport that we want to engage in up at the lake without paying for a special filtration plant. And we also have the dam retrofit. Without the dam, Royal Grande Creek would be dry most of the summer because there are no large streams flowing into it. So from the residents, my point of view, they're taking our water and they're not bothering to replace it. If it's federal law, that new federal law or new state law after the dam was originally built that requires us to provide them water, they should be replacing it. And through the state water project or through any other means, deemed acceptable. But to take our water to replace a habitat that was never there before the dam is, from this resident's point of view, doesn't sound very good. And so that's why I was encouraged myself to, after hearing the presentation that was given earlier, to come down here. And I know that the last session of comments is right before the end of the meeting, and I was able to make that. So those are my comments for tonight. And if there's any way that we could get the state and feds to replace our water, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe we should add that to our comments that we send forward. Anyone else? Okay, if not, we'll close the final public comment. That'll take us to our last item, which is adjournment. Okay, thank you, gentlemen.